Welcome back to the Deep Dive. You know, we all just sort of take it for granted how the modern world works, don't we?
Oh, completely.
Your GPS gets you to work, satellite weather keeps you out of the rain, global finance is moving at the speed of light, and it all relies on infrastructure orbiting over our heads. But what protects that infrastructure? Today, we are looking up way, way up at the existential threats we barely even think about. Things like solar flares that could just fry our power grids.
Right. And killer asteroids, as the headlines love to say.
And, maybe most ironically, the growing cloud of space junk that we put there ourselves.
It's a huge pivot, really, in how we think about space. For decades, it was all about utilization. You know, get up there, set up your satellite, run your business.
They use it.
Exactly. But now we're faced with these three really distinct categories of hazards, and we have to start treating space itself as a critical environment that needs, well, active defense and stewardship.
That's the perfect word for it, stewardship. And our focus today is on the European Space Agency's answer to that. It's their comprehensive shield for the solar system, the Space Safety Program, or S2P.
And many will remember its old name, the Space Situational Awareness Program, or SSA.
Right. But this name change from SSA to S2P, it's not just branding. It feels fundamental.
It is. It's the difference between just passively watching something and actively intervening.
Okay, so what's fascinating here is that the S2P's core mandate goes way beyond just, you know, observation.
Oh, absolutely. It's really a four-step cycle. First, you monitor the hazards. Then you determine the risk, and you do it with high fidelity.
Yeah.
Then you share that critical data with the civil protection authorities, the infrastructure owners, and then, and this is the revolutionary part, wherever possible, you actively mitigate the threat.
That mitigation step is the whole ballgame.
It's everything. That's the new philosophy.
And if you want to see just how seriously ESA and its member states are taking this, you just have to look at the money. I mean, look at the commitment they made at the 2025 Ministerial Council.
The numbers are pretty staggering.
They approved a budget of 955 million euros for S2P for just the next 3 years.
Which is an incredible commitment. And that number, it represents a 30% budget increase over the last funding cycle.
Wow.
And our sources say, and this is the key part, it was actually higher than what the program initially requested.
So they asked for X and got X plus. That never happened.
Never happens. This wasn't a compromise. This is an urgent investment. It tells you that the member states see space safety not as some optional research field, but as an immediate absolute priority, one that, you know, underpins global security and economic stability.
So they're funding everything.
Every single mission proposal.
Okay, so S2P organizes this huge task around three critical threats, and they call them cornerstones. First, we have monitoring and predicting space weather. Second is planetary defense, so asteroid impact prediction and prevention.
The big one.
And third, the challenge of the orbital environment itself. That's managed by the active debris removal and in-orbit servicing cornerstone, or ADIOS.
So what we're looking at is basically a unified, multi-layered defense strategy. It goes all the way from the sun's plasma emissions millions of miles away.
Down to tiny bits of paint fleck and metal orbiting right above us.
Exactly. And this deep dive is all about understanding the technical depth and, frankly, the historical necessity of each part of this massive defense system.
All right, let's unpack it. And let's start with the most unpredictable and maybe the most devastating threat. Cornerstone one, the solar punch. The cornerstone one, it's all about the sun. We tend to think of it as this, you know, life-giving, gentle star.
Not so much.
No. It's a violent, unpredictable star that is constantly firing plasma and particles our way. And this isn't just about pretty auroras, is it?
No. This is serious infrastructure defense. The focus here is monitoring the sun's activity, the solar wind, and how all those dynamic interactions affect everything from our atmosphere, you know, the magnetosphere, ionosphere, all of that, to our vital infrastructure, both in space and on the ground.
It's a really complex threat then. It hits us on multiple fronts.
It does. A major coronal mass ejection, a CME, that's a huge burst of plasma and magnetic field from the sun. It can take a few days to get here.
Okay.
But when it arrives, the geomagnetic storm it triggers can induce currents in the ground that literally damage long-distance power grids. pipelines too.
Wow.
And in the ionosphere, those particles scramble radio communications, they degrade GPS signals, and in space, they can charge up satellite components and cause what we call single event upsets.
Which is when the electronics just fail.
They just fail. Or worse, the whole satellite gets fried.
So the goal here isn't just to see the fire, it's to predict where the smoke is going to go and how much damage it's going to do.
That's a great way to put it. And all that processed, actionable data is made available for free and instantly through the Space Weather Service Network.
Okay, that's the delivery system.
That's the utility side, yes. But to get those predictions, you need a whole new generation of surveillance. And that brings us to the most ambitious part of this cornerstone, the Vigil mission.
Vigil. I like the name.
It's Europe's upcoming deep space sentinel. It's planned for launch in 2031.
And the placement of Vigil is what makes it such a game changer for our warning times, right?
Yeah.
It's going to the Sun-Earth Lagrange point L5.
Correct.
So for our listeners, what exactly is L5 and why is that specific spot, that 60-degree angle, so crucial?
Okay, so think of L5 as Earth's rearview mirror. Most of our current space weather observers, like the American satellites, they sit at L1, which is directly between the sun and Earth.
So they're staring right into the sun.
They're staring right at the source, yes.
Yeah.
But L5 is a gravitationally stable point that's 60 degrees behind Earth in its orbit. Now, the sun rotates about once every 27 days.
Right.
By sitting at L5, Vigil can see the active solar regions, the sunspots that are firing off CMEs up to 4 or 5 days before that region rotates to face the Earth.
Ah, so that delayed view is everything. If a CME hits us with no warning, we've got, what, minutes to react, to protect satellites, shut down grids.
Exactly. An L5 vantage point turns that minutes-long warning into a potential 12 to 24 hours of actionable lead time. Depends on how fast the solar material is moving, of course.
But that's a huge difference.
That time is priceless. I mean, power grid operators can do controlled shutdowns, airlines can reroute polar flights, satellite operators can put their spacecraft into safer modes. L5 moves us from just reacting to being strategically prepared.
Which justifies the massive investment in a mission like Vigil.
Completely.
And Vigil isn't alone. It's the centerpiece of a fleet, right? The Distributed Space Weather Sensor System, or D3S.
I do appreciate a good acronym.
Me too. So what makes up this network? How do these Earth-orbiting missions complement what Vigil is seeing from so far away?
So while Vigil gives us that wide-field preemptive view of the sun itself, the D3S missions give us the close-up, localized data. They tell us about the effects of the storm on Earth's immediate environment.
They're like the on-the-ground reporters.
They are. They give us the real-time diagnostics on how well our magnetic shield is holding up.
Okay, so let's look at the missions. First up is SWING, launching in 2027. It's focused on the ionosphere.
Yeah, and SWING is crucial because the ionosphere is where so many of our radio communication problems happen. By monitoring its density and composition in real time, forecasters can predict communication blackouts and GPS errors way more accurately.
Okay, and then we have the Aurora C constellation.
Yeah.
With the first launch planned for 2030, this one's looking at the auroral oval.
That's right. The auroral oval is, you know, the visible sign of solar particles hitting our atmosphere. But its size and location are also proxies for how much magnetic disturbance is going on.
So by watching the whole oval with a constellation of satellites,
ORAC gives scientists real-time global diagnostics on the state of the magnetosphere, our planetary shield.
And finally, there's SWORD, planned for 2032. Two satellites monitoring the radiation belts from a specialized GTO-like orbit. Why that specific orbit? And why are the radiation belts such a big deal?
The radiation belts, or Van Allen belts, are these huge regions of highly energetic trapped particles. During a space weather event, they can swell up dramatically.
And that's bad for satellites passing through.
It's very bad. They get exposed to intense particle fluxes. It can degrade their solar panels, rapidly age their electronics, and increase the risk of those sudden failures we mentioned.
And the orbit. The GTO-like path.
A geosynchronous transfer orbit is highly elliptical. It dips low over the equator and then swings way out from Earth. This path is chosen because it constantly cuts through the most volatile regions of the radiation belt. It provides continuous, targeted measurements that you just can't get from a satellite in a lower circular orbit.
It's a massive leap forward. But like we said, ESA had a strong foundation for all this, didn't they?
They did. The sources remind us that the old Space Situational Awareness Program, the SSA, laid all the groundwork for this between 2009 and 2019. The initial space weather segment of the SSA was all about establishing the capability to deliver real-time info. They integrated data from existing assets, like the sun-observing Probe-2 satellite and ground telescopes, like the Kanzelhö Solar Observatory.
So that initial coordination, which was centralized in Belgium, right? That let them practice forecasting and build the models.
That are now being plugged into this brand new D3S fleet.
So the old program taught them how to sense and forecast, and now S2P is building the custom, dedicated infrastructure that makes the warning truly actionable.
It's a textbook transition from pure research to operational defense.
Yeah.
We're going from just recording that a hazard exists to actively providing a shield against its worst effects. Which leads us perfectly into the second cornerstone, an equally catastrophic but entirely different kind of cosmic threat.
The rogue rocks. Cornerstone 2, planetary defense. This is the stuff of movies, isn't it? We're talking about preventing mass extinction events here.
Well, yeah, the challenge is immense. Asteroids and comets, these near-Earth objects, or NEOs, they're often small, they're dark compositionally, and they're moving at just staggering velocities.
So finding them before they become an imminent threat requires a systematic global effort.
You need to cover the whole sky. And you need to find the ones that are currently too dim or too far away to spot easily.
And Europe's effort on this is centralized at the Near-Earth Object Coordination Center, the NEOCC, in Italy.
That's the brain of the operation. It takes observations from telescopes all over Europe, plots the orbits, and calculates those ever-shifting risk probabilities.
And the NEOCC relies on some pretty exciting new hardware, especially the FlyEye network.
The FlyEye is a brilliant piece of engineering. Unlike a traditional telescope with a narrow field of view, the FlyEye is automated and uses multiple lenses, sort of like a fly's compound eye.
To get a really wide view.
An incredibly wide area of the sky. It allows it to scan the entire sky every single night, looking for new NEOs.
And the sources say the first one achieved first light in Sicily in 2025. That's a huge upgrade from the older systems, right?
Yeah.
The mix of amateur telescopes and the focused OGS telescope that the old SSA program used.
Oh, it's a massive upgrade. The FlyEye network turns detection from a sort of patchwork operation into a systematic industrial process. And that kind of rapid, repeatable sky coverage is essential for finding the smaller, you know, city tiller-sized objects that could sneak up on us.
But this is obviously a global problem. If a threat is found, Europe can't just act alone.
Of course not. And SGP really emphasizes collaboration through groups like the International Asteroid Warning Network, IAWN, and the Space Mission Planning Advisory Group, or SMPAG.
So what's the difference between those two? How do they work together?
Think of IAWN as the data hub. They handle the confirmed information sharing, the technical alerts, the trajectory math.
Okay, they're the ones who say when and where.
Exactly. SMPAG, on the other hand, is the policy and action body. They coordinate the actual impact response. They decide what deflection standards we should use, what technology, kinetic impactor, or something else would be deployed if a real threat popped up.
So SMPAG is the how we respond, which brings us to the active defense part and the HERA mission.
HERA is probably the most famous mission in this cornerstone. It's the forensic follow-up to a real-world test.
A DART mission.
Right. In September 2022, NASA's DART mission successfully smashed into Dimorphos, the little moonlet of the Didymos asteroid system. It proved that kinetic impact deflection is a viable strategy.
So we know it worked, and HERA, which launched in October 2024, is going to meet up with that system in 2026. What's the point? What forensic data is it collecting?
So DART was the proof of concept. HERA is the deep engineering analysis. We need to know precisely how that momentum was transferred. HERA is going to do a detailed survey of the post-impact Dimorphos. It'll analyze the crater, measure the physical properties of the surface. Was it solid rock or just a loose rubble pile? And crucially, it's going to quantify the momentum enhancement factor.
A what now? The momentum enhancement factor.
Right. So when the DART spacecraft hit, it didn't just transfer its own momentum. The impact blasted a huge amount of material off the surface.
Like a shotgun blast.
Exactly. And that ejecta plume acted like a retro rocket. It gave the asteroid an extra push. That secondary push is the enhancement factor, and it's what made DART so effective. HERA will measure that and give us the hard numbers we need to design future deflection missions against unknown threats.
This is where the long-term planning gets really serious.
Mm-hmm.
Beyond HERA, ESA is committing to a whole suite of future missions, starting with the HERA-derived mission, RAMSES.
RAMSES is launching in 2028, and its target is the infamous asteroid Apophis.
Apophis. That's the one that gave everyone a scare in the early 2000s, right? A small chance of impact in 2029.
That's the one. Later calculations ruled that out, thankfully, but it's still an object of intense interest because of its close approaches.
So Ramsey's going to go study it up close.
Exactly. It'll give us high-fidelity data on its size, its mass, its internal structure, all vital for trajectory modeling. Every piece of data we get on a major NEO helps us predict its path decades in advance.
And then we've got SATIS, a smaller CubeSat mission in 2030. But maybe the biggest leap in detection is NEOMAR.
NEOMAR is a true architectural game changer. It's planned for the 2030s, and it's an asteroid-detecting space telescope that will sit at the Sun-Earth Lagrange point L1.
Okay, we talked about L5 being the rearview mirror for solar observation. Why L1, the point directly between Earth and the Sun for asteroids? Isn't it just blinded by solar glare?
That's precisely why it's so crucial. Asteroids that approach Earth often come from the direction of the Sun. From our perspective on Earth, they're completely washed out by the glare.
The ultimate blind spot.
It is. But NEOMAR uses thermal infrared detection. Asteroids absorb sunlight and then re-radiate it as heat. NEOMAR's sensors can see that heat, that infrared signature, even when the object is visually lost in the sun's glare. It's designed specifically to find those sneaky, risky asteroids that we currently cannot see.
So we have systematic detection with FlyEye and NEOMAR, and we've proven kinetic impact with Hera. What's the next step in defense technology?
That brings us to the future of deflection. The Precision Asteroid Nudging Mission, scheduled for 2032. This one will test ion beam asteroid deflection.
An ion beam? That sounds delicate compared to smashing a spacecraft into something. How does that work?
The principle is using the momentum from a powerful, high-velocity ion beam, basically a focused stream of ionized propellant, to gently but continuously nudge an asteroid off course.
A tiny, continuous force over a long time.
Over months or even years, unlike the kinetic impactor, which is a single, massive shove.
And you'd use that for an asteroid that's structurally fragile, a rubble pile.
Exactly. If you hit a loosely bound rubble pile with a dart-like impactor, you might just break it into a dozen smaller, equally dangerous pieces. For those objects, a gentle, sustained nudge is the superior solution. It's the next level of precision. And it shows S2P is building a whole toolbox for this cosmic threat.
That is staggering. The move from just looking up to actively manipulating these objects. Okay, let's pivot now to the threat that is maybe even more urgent, because it's the one we created ourselves, space debris.
Mm-hmm.
Right? This is the active debris removal and in-orbit servicing cornerstone, or ADRIOS. And if space is an ecosystem, we have polluted it to a critical, critical degree.
Absolutely. And this cornerstone is all about securing the future sustainability of space. It's about preventing the dreaded Kessler syndrome.
Where collisions create more debris, which leads to a cascade of more collisions, until certain orbits are just unusable for generations.
And ADRIOS is really the most obvious sign of that shift we talked about, from passive SSA to active S2P. It's an admission that tracking debris isn't enough anymore. We have to start cleaning up.
Look, stop making new junk.
And stop making new junk. The approach is twofold. First, there's the necessary background work of tracking and avoidance. And second, there's the high-risk, high-reward work of active removal.
Okay, so on the tracking side, S2P is still tracking everything from active satellites down to tennis ball-sized junk?
Yes, to predict conjunctions and give operators data for collision avoidance maneuvers. And the old SSA space surveillance and tracking segment built this capability using existing European military and civil radar.
And we should remember the scale of those systems. We're talking about things like the massive Italian Northern Cross radio telescope, the UK's RAF Fylingdales phased array radar, the French Graves system.
Right. They leveraged all that radar with optical assets like the OLS telescope and the Starbrook network. But the future is all about speed and automation.
Because there's just too much stuff to track manually.
Exactly. S2P is developing a fully automated collision avoidance system. The in-orbit test for that is called CREAM, and it launches in 2028. We're just reaching the point where human operators can't keep up. Automation is essential for space traffic management.
But the really ambitious part of ADRIOS is the active removal and servicing, the cleanup crew.
This has been talked about for years, but now we're finally seeing real missions.
Let's start with removal. The flagship mission is ClearSpace 1, launching in 2028.
ClearSpace 1 is pivotal. It's commissioned by ESA, and it will be the first ever mission to actively remove a piece of verified space debris from orbit, in this case, a defunct Vega rocket adapter.
And this mission succeeded in earlier canceled mission called ED Orbit, right? Why did that one get canceled?
ED Orbit was just incredibly complex and expensive. It was trying to develop a single capture system that could handle all kinds of tumbling, non-cooperative, weirdly shaped satellites.
Too ambitious for a first try.
Way too ambitious. ClearSpace One narrows the focus. It's targeting a specific known object with a manageable shape. It'll use a set of four robotic arms, like a big claw, to grab the object and pull it into a controlled destructive reentry. It limits the complexity to prove the concept.
A powerful symbol. What comes after that?
We have a race planned for 2030, which will go after a larger defunct satellite. But maybe the most important standardization effort is the joint ESA mission CAT, or Capture Payload Bay, also for 2030. CAT is designed to test a standardized docking interface specifically for removing satellites.
That's critical. So the idea is that every future satellite has to have this standard grappling ring or bay built in.
Exactly. Then removal becomes a low-risk docking maneuver, not a high-risk bespoke salvage job every single time. It's prevention built right into the removal system.
And that standardization makes the whole cleanup idea commercially viable.
That's the key. And moving from removal, Adrios also invests heavily in in-orbit servicing, or IOS, which is all about extending the life of valuable operational satellites.
The economic side is sustainability. The demonstration for that is RISE, launching in 2029.
RISE is focused on mission life extension, especially in geostationary orbit. GEO satellites are multi-billion dollar assets, and their lifespan is often just limited by how much fuel they have.
So RISE will go up and refuel them.
It'll demonstrate that capability, yes. To rendezvous, dock, and refuel, or even repair a satellite, that could add 5 to 10 years to its operational life, which is a massive return on investment.
And then further out, we have Encore and, I love this name, Circular Economy I in 2031.
That term, circular economy, it tells you everything about the philosophical shift. We're moving to a model where components are reused, repaired, or replaced in orbit, instead of just being thrown away.
And this all ties into the broader ESA initiative, Clean Space and Prevention.
Which is where eco-design comes in.
Designing satellites for minimal environmental impact from day one.
Exactly. It's about embedding sustainability into the mission design from the drawing board. Using materials that break up completely on reentry, including those standardized docking interfaces, designing for modularity so components can be serviced.
And this leads to things like zero debris technologies, like the EcoStars project.
Planned for 2031, which will test these new design principles in orbit.
But to design for safe reentry, you need to know what actually happens when a satellite breaks up. Which brings us to the very unique DRACO mission, launching in 2027.
DRACO is a fascinating mission. It's basically a dedicated observational capsule. It's going to fly alongside a test satellite and specifically monitor it breaking up during an uncontrolled atmospheric reentry.
It's flying into the fire to collect data.
Literally. Data on fragmentation patterns, heat transfer, how much material actually survives to the ground.
Why don't we have that data already?
It's just incredibly hard to collect from the ground, and no one has ever dedicated a mission solely to watching it happen. DRACO's data is crucial for validating all those zero debris standards. It ensures that when we make rules, those regulations are based on empirical fact, not just theory.
Okay, one last thing for this cornerstone, advanced tracking. The sources mention laser-based tech being tested at the Isania 1 and Isania 2 laser ranging stations on Tenerife.
These stations are absolutely vital. Lasers provide meter-level precision tracking, which you need for accurate collision prediction and for capture missions like ClearSpace 1.
But they're also testing something else, remote deflection.
Yes, remote deflection of space debris.
So are we talking about using lasers as like a weapon to vaporize junk?
Not at all. The goal is not destruction. The physics is much more subtle. You apply laser energy to the surface of the debris for a short time. This causes a tiny amount of material to vaporize. It's called laser ablation.
And that little puff of vapor?
It acts like a micropropellant. It creates a minuscule controlled thrust that alters the object's trajectory just enough to make it safely re-enter the atmosphere or avoid a collision. It's precision control that avoids all the geopolitical risks of actually blowing things up in orbit.
The technical ambition here is just stunning.
Yeah.
So what's the structure that holds all these cornerstones together?
Well, while the cornerstones manage those huge, visible flagship missions, the whole ESA structure also relies on 6 supporting cosmic areas.
And these areas are the engine room.
That's a great way to put it. They manage the smaller, higher-risk missions and provide the underlying services that let the cornerstones succeed.
So Cosmic develops the specialized tech, supports the industrial base, refines the models for asteroid impacts. that sort of thing.
Exactly. They make sure the industrial and technological capacity is there to support the big goals. They might fund research into new materials for a debris capture net or better models for predicting geomagnetic effects on a specific power grid. They're the essential support structure.
Okay, so let's look ahead to the incredible fleet that's being built for the 2030s. We've mentioned the L5 Solar Lookout, Vigil, and the L1 Infrared Asteroid Finder, NEOMAR. What else is on the horizon?
We're seeing missions designed to detect the threats that are basically invisible to us right now. For example, SALAR, planned for 2030. These satellites will use these giant, delicate solar sail-like foils as super-sensitive impact detectors for sub-centimeter debris.
Sub-centimeter. So debris that's too small for ground radar to track reliably, but it's still moving fast enough to be lethal to a satellite.
Correct. Using the foil to register those hits gives us the vital in-situ data we need to accurately model that environment. Without SALAR, we're essentially just guessing at the density of the smallest but most numerous debris cloud.
And the program's ambition is already pushing beyond Earth orbit. I saw the LEMO demonstrator planned for 2032.
LEMO. That's the Lunar Environment Monitoring Mission. It's for cislunar debris monitoring. As everyone starts heading back to the moon, building things like LunaNet, ESA recognizes that the debris threat isn't just an Earth orbit problem anymore.
They're trying to get ahead of the curve, securing the cislunar frontier before we pollute that too.
Proactively. And finally, back to the sun. We have Vigil as the L5 scout, but there's also SHIELD planned for the 2030s.
What does SHIELD add?
It's an advanced warning mission for CMEs that complements Vigil. It provides additional targeted data on the magnetic field structure of the approaching plasma cloud. It just reinforces that core philosophy. Distribute your sensors, analyze the threat in three dimensions, and maximize your warning time.
So what is this whole massive S2P structure, the budget, the missions, the ambition, what does it all mean for you, for the listener, the person who relies on their GPS and their cell phone and continuous climate data?
It means that ESA isn't just launching a few scattered science missions. It is systematically building a comprehensive, integrated, multi-layered defense system for our entire digital age.
And that huge budget increase.
That rapid, massive escalation shows that these threats are not future hypotheticals anymore. S2P is the necessary strategic technological response to ensure that the foundational space infrastructure that underpins all of modern life remains viable.
That connection between the history and the necessity of it all, that's what's so striking. Hashtag tag outro. You know, if we look back, the transformation from the old SSA program to S2P is just profound. Mm. SSA was passive. It was mostly about monitoring and sending out alerts.
Mm-hmm.
S2P has transitioned to active intervention. It's monitoring and mitigating, preventing, and now cleaning up. And the fact that the 2025 Ministerial Council gave them more money than they even asked for, it just confirms the urgency.
Absolutely. We've gone through the three cornerstones: planetary defense, space weather, and active debris removal. But if you connect all of this to the bigger picture, this program is fundamentally about managing the tragedy of the commons in orbit. Mm. It's about ensuring the long-term viability of space exploration and utilization. The question is no longer if we need to act, it's how fast.
Which raises that huge question about the future of space stewardship for everybody, for all nations.
It does. When is monitoring the environment just not enough anymore? When does active intervention, like developing these debris removal technologies we see with ClearSpace One, become the required norm for all spacefaring nations?
And how quickly can we get universal standards like eco-design implemented?
Before the debris problem hits that irreversible titching point,
yeah.
The Kessler syndrome.
And that's the challenge, isn't it? For the next generation of engineers, of policymakers, the future of our access to space might depend less on building faster, cheaper rockets.
And more on how quickly we can achieve a clean and zero space debris future.
The threat is real.
Eh?
And these next few decades of S2P missions will determine if we can avoid it. The security of life on Earth really does depend on the health of the environment just above it.
A critical deep dive into a topic that really it affects every single one of us.
Indeed. Until next time, stay curious and stay informed.